2018 World Credit Union Conference in this amazing place called Singapore. I keep saying that in every interview, but it's just amazing. Everywhere you walk around here, it's just the architecture, the buildings, the food. Oh my gosh, it's amazing.
It totally blew my mind. It was way beyond my expectations.
Indeed. Highly recommend it. It's a long trip out here, but it is well worth it.
And you get a lot of elite qualifying miles for your airline. So
there you go. Know,
there's a bonus with that.
Bonus big time. Hey, we're here with World Council's Michael Edwards. How are you doing, sir?
Pretty good. The conference is going well. Yeah, I mean, we've got good attendees, good vendors, got people like you here, couldn't really ask for much more, to be honest. So, and on top of it, the regulatory pendulum is swinging in the direction of lower regulatory burdens.
That's what we're talking about.
At the international level.
Yeah.
So we got to make sure that happens at the national level. But one of the things that's happened, I guess, since the last time we talked, is that at the end of 2017, the Basel Committee finalized Basel III, which had been under work since the financial crisis, since 2010.
Oh my gosh, wow, right. That's a long time.
And they'd been moving it around. Mm-hmm. And, the global financial crisis started more than 10 years ago, really. So at the beginning, it was all tighten. Now, towards the end, they realized they tightened it kind of too far.
Mm-hmm.
So in the final version, there are a number of things that are really kind of more focused on tightening up things on big banks and less on community-based financial institutions like credit unions.
Right.
So one of the things that is key on that is they've been emphasizing proportionality and regulation. And that's something you can take to NCUA, you can take to regulators in Canada, Australia, whatever it is. And you essentially say, well, look, these rules are designed for big banks, and we want to have safe and sound regulation. Mm-hmm. That's necessary, mm-hmm. but you don't have to do it in this super complicated way.
Right.
And a lot of people in the United States don't realize that the risk-based capital regulation from NCUA that may or may not go away is really based on Basel standards. It's really Basel II. And if they were to keep it around, the changes in Basel III would actually make it less bad.
Oh.
For example.
Well, we like less bad.
Right. Less bad is good.
Yeah.
And so just an example with that, under the NCUA's risk-based capital rule, mortgages that you're holding in portfolio are weighted at 35% of face value, which means, you hold 35% as much capital as you would against a member business loan, basically.
Okay.
In Basel III, they make it a sliding scale, where if you've got at least 20% equity or you got private mortgage insurance or some other type of guarantee on it, mm-hmm. it's actually 30% or lower.
Hmm.
And loans that have been in the portfolio that have had a lot of principal paid off go down to as low as 20%. So while NCUA is under pressure to remove that reg, that's just one example from that, where if it does stick around, mm-hmm. it's going to be less bad than before. Although mm-hmm. to be honest, when you've got a 7% net worth ratio, you don't really need risk-based capital at all, because risk-based capital is designed for institutions that have a leverage ratio, net worth ratio of 3%, 4%.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And another good thing in it was really that the big banks under the Basel standards, they get to write their own rules, okay? If you're a credit union. Yes, exactly. Well, what it is that they have standardized risk weights, standardized amounts of capital,
mm-hmm.
unless you're so big and sophisticated, you can use your own computer models, to say, oh no, we don't need that much, okay? Which costs millions of dollars. Well, in the final version of Basel III, they said two things, is that basically, if you use that sort of stuff, you can't lower your capital more than about 72% compared to what it would be under the standardized approach.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I would have had it at 100%, just have, if you're going to have a global system, have everybody play the same rules.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
And during the global financial crisis, it was banks even though Lehman Brothers wasn't a depository institution, they were doing it that way, and they said, oh, we don't really need to have any capital.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of why they failed, because their models were all wrong. Wachovia's models were wrong. Basically, everybody's models were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't really understand the policy reason why you have two different sets of rules. Even within what's supposed to be a single thing. The justification is they say, oh, well, the standardized approach isn't granular enough, but if by making it more granular, you're always lowering the amount of capital compared mm-hmm. to the approach credit unions have to follow, mm-hmm. or mutual depository institutions in Australia, it's just, that's not a level playing field. It's madness. I mean, the whole idea is to have capital there for when there's a rainy day, obviously.
Course.
So like why say, oh, well, I got this model that says, oh, our mortgages are all fine. I mean, they did a study in Australia where basically all the big banks in Australia were holding, I don't know, 20-25% less capital against their mortgages compared to the credit unions and mutual banks and others. Yeah. Which doesn't make any sense. They're making the same types of loans, but it's just, oh, well, we're sophisticated enough, we get to write our own rules. So at least there's a limit on that. It is, and that's why Basel II didn't really work, because that was their standard. That was how it was working.
Mm-hmm.
They were just basically, they only did it for the big banks at that point. They hadn't phased it in for smaller ones.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And all of them were doing their own models, and you know, they hire all these consultants, and the regulators are supposed to come in and say, oh, well, you missed a spot. And, well, anyway, well, why have us do a standardized approach if you're going to allow that sort of thing to happen? So that's already been done, which is really good. There's some other things that they're working on. They just had a proposal on market risk, which is like interest rate risk and, like, you know, available for sale loans and security, stuff like that. Well, they proposed a simplified approach, which basically would be much less burdensome than how larger institutions would do it, because they're under pressure not just from, you know, organizations like World Council, but, you know, community-based institutions all over the world. Although we're one of the ones who engages a lot more. I mean, there's the World Savings Bank Institute and the European Association of Cooperative Banks, but we're the only ones who represent only small institutions or community-based institutions. The other ones have, like, Wells Fargo as their members, or Credit Agricole or whatever, Rabobank, the really big banks, which, you know, what it is, they have different priorities than the little guys like us. So in terms of the work plan going forward at the international level, it's set by the G20. And the G20 right now has Argentina as its president. Because they rotate. It's different countries each year. Last time it was Germany. Before that it was China. And what the Argentines have done is they say, we want to analyze whether these rules that we put in place over the past 8 years or so are too burdensome, particularly for lending to small and medium businesses, also infrastructure finance, things like that. And they always say, well, we've got to have a, you know, fact-based, you know, policy-making process. So they commissioned two different studies on, well, how are these rules affecting SME lending? How are they affecting infrastructure finance? And so the G20 meeting coming up in November, which is going to be in Buenos Aires, I think is going to be kind of a further inflection point in favor of kind of deregulation, not for the big guys, because they're really focusing more on the big guys, but on the little guys who are getting hit as collateral damage, because a lot of prudential supervisors, as much as we might love them, they don't want to say, oh, well, you know, I didn't follow the international standard and then there was a crisis, so it's my fault. You know, that's the thing. If you always follow the international standard, even if it doesn't work, you say, oh, but it was that guy in Switzerland who told me to do it, you know?
Yeah.
Not my fault.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, risky to deviate from that. So the more we end up getting standards that say, well, you can either exempt institutions that don't operate in multiple countries from this, which happens a lot. We got exemptions from the interest rate risk rules at the international level for that, from some other things that, had it been applied to credit unions, would have been crazy, because they would have had to issue, like, convertible bonds that become, like, stock. We got out of that. And then the proportionality part, we're just trying to continue to hammer that and, you know, make sure that credit unions and other, you know, mutual depository institutions aren't killed by regulatory burden, because these days it's the reg burden and technology costs that are really, like, driving consolidation. And even then, you're up against a big guy who's, like, writing his own rules, okay? Because they are, you know, so big that you just got it. I know. Well, you know, if you're going to have a single system, it should be a single system.
Exactly.
Like, in Australia, they say, well, it's a level playing field. Canada, they're also kind of saying, oh, it was a level playing field, but there are two sets of rules. There's ones for the little guys, and then the big guys kind of say, well, we get to write our own ones. So we're very hopeful. You know, what's actually coming out these days is really good. It's just kind of a question of taking it to the national level, evangelizing, saying, look, maybe you don't need this risk-based capital rule, but if you are going to do it, why don't you loosen it up the way that the international organizations have said you can.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit worse for the Canadians and the Australians than, say, in the United States, because, you know, the big banks in Canada and Australia, like, say, TD Bank, they've run out of room to grow in Canada, and there's the same situation in Australia. So they really, their growth is going overseas to other countries, the big guys.
Okay.
You know, RBC, whatever, Scotiabank's all over the Caribbean and Latin America. And so their regulators really want to, like, follow the international standards lockstep, so they have no question about whether these big banks can enter these other markets and mm-hmm. continue to grow, which, mm-hmm. are, you know, just because they run out of room in Canada or Australia to do anything. But then the same regulators are putting pressure on credit unions or mutual depository institutions in Australia to follow the same rules so that, well, just in case there's some kind of crisis in that sector, it's not going to make us look bad for our big banks that are such an important part of our mm-hmm. economy. But the credit unions are important too.
Right.
So
right.
Anyway, it's an ongoing battle, but we're fighting it every day. And, you know, the pendulum's swinging back in the direction of reasonableness and proportionality.
What does it mean for credit unions in general? I mean, because it sounds like good news, obviously, but when you have these large folks writing their own rules...
Well, that's why we were happy to see that there's at least a floor on them now, that they can't take it more than 72.5% of what it would be if you were a credit union, essentially, and following risk-based capital.
Okay.
And they also said that the big banks, the really big ones, you know, the global and systemically important banks and the big Canadian Australian banks, they can't bring their leverage ratios below 5 or 6%, which is already, that's like getting to credit union type leverage mm-hmm, ratios, mm-hmm. which makes total sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, those guys are too big to fail.
Right.
They get all these benefits from basically the market knowing they're not going to fail. So mm-hmm. they lend to them, like give them cheap funding. A credit union would never have that cheap funding.
Yeah.
And they don't pay for this. So, you know, they should be the ones who have the extra capital. I mean, credit unions and other cooperatives don't have the incentives to take the same types of risks.
Just a word right out of my mouth.
Right. Well, exactly. Well, I mean, you don't have stock compensation. You know, you want to, like, keep your job. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't mm-hmm. want to, like, do the cliff diving stuff, mm-hmm. at least if you have any sense. That's just not set up that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Set up to serve the members. It's not set up to, like, all right, I'm going to, like, bet on red, and if it ends up black, the government's going to bail me out, you know, and otherwise I get richer than Croesus. So that's basically what the bankers are doing, is what they've been doing for years. Well, you know, there used to be a term for it called, or I guess there still is, called lemon socialism. Lemon, like the fruit.
Yeah, yeah.
And what it is essentially you socialize the losses, but there's private gains. So, you know, this is what happened.
So we pay for the losses and the gains are inside. Okay.
Right, exactly.
Kind of what happened.
Exactly.
Sounds kind of familiar.
It does.
What happened a few years ago.
Well, it's exactly what happened before. And so, you know, there's always threats of potential crises. I think right now things are going pretty well in terms of the economy in a lot of these countries. In Canada and Australia, they're concerned about house prices in places like Vancouver and Toronto or Sydney and Melbourne.
Are they getting too high?
Well, they've been going up and up and up because those are the places people want to live.
Sure.
And actually, nice. I thought 5 years ago, you know, the trend would cool off.
Yeah.
It sort of cooled off a bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, those are single markets. There are just a couple cities in each of those countries. So what the bigger issue is that they end up making regs that apply to the entire country where they don't
because
have those
that.
Problems. Because of that.
Oh, okay.
And they say, well, that's what it is. I mean, in Canada right now, they've got this reg specifically designed really for Vancouver and Toronto, but it applies to the whole country. They're doing these data collections that one credit union told me it's costing them $500,000 Canadian just to put the data together. It's like a, you know, $5 billion credit union, but that's still a lot of money.
That's a lot of
money for a data collection mm-hmm. thing. And this is for the Canada Mortgage Housing Finance Corporation, which basically is a mortgage guarantor. Yeah, it's sort of like Ginnie Mae in a way, mm-hmm. but they're asking for data on the stuff they don't guarantee,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and which makes no sense to me. I mean, why would you care about the mortgages in your portfolio you're not responsible
right.
for? And they say, well, somehow we might think this might possibly affect our insured ones, but nobody's been able to connect the dots for me on that one. But, you know, the costs are there. The costs are there. And, you know, that's just, you know, people, you know, the regulators talk to each other. They look north of the border, south of the border, whatever. They say, well, they're doing that. Mm-hmm. The bad ideas travel really, really fast mm-hmm. sometimes, mm-hmm. especially when it's for tightening regulatory burden.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
We've been lucky at the international level to have it going the other way.
Right.
And that's really because, you know, the governments of, you know, the United States or the United Kingdom and some of the other kind of bigger guys are like, well, hold on, it's kind of gone too far. Whereas countries like Australia and Canada, they're at the table too, but they don't really want to rock the boat.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. but while we're going there, they're going to come along too. So we've got to convince them at the national level, but we're going in the right direction. And I'm very hopeful for the future.
Goodness, wow. You know what, you're the perfect interview.
Well,
thank you.
I asked
one question and you answered everything.
Well, good, I appreciate
it. This is really, well, it sounds like overall, except for a few little caveats there, it sounds like good news overall for credit
unions. Yes,
yeah. So it's good to hear.
It is, and they're still always doing something. They gotta have something to do.
Right.
But now what they're doing is a little bit more in like reg relief, and that's what's
What can credit unions do in the meantime? Can they have a say in all this type of stuff?
Well, yes.
What
the deal is,
well?
Even though we're talking about international organizations like the Basel Committee, you know, in Switzerland,
mm-hmm.
really it's made up of the U.S. government, the Canadian government, the Australian government, the government of France, the government of the U.K., mm-hmm. the government of Germany, the G20 countries.
Right.
They're the ones
right.
there.
Right.
Argentina, too.
Right.
And they kind of rotate who's kind of setting the agenda. For a long time, it was like tighten, tighten, tighten. Now it's like the Germans even are kind of like, well, let's not tighten it anymore. Because we're seeing they've got, they don't have credit unions in Germany, but they got cooperative banks, kind of similar.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, whoa, we're getting killed here. And that's the direction we're going now. So
okay.
basically lobbying your governments, they're the ones really there. They might say, oh, it's an international organization that told us this, but it's like the U.S. Treasury, the Federal Reserve Board are the ones there.
Yeah,
so go talk to Treasury.
Right, right.
Say, listen, you got to have proportionality.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, you know, credit unions and community banks kind of have like the same interests
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's filtering through. And the bigger the country is, the more pull they have in these international organizations. So a country like the U.S., while we're successful being able to go in and talk to them and say, listen, you got to help us out here because mm-hmm. this is, you're trying to rein in these big banks, but, you know, we're getting killed. And mm-hmm. they're like, we didn't mean to kill you, you know. It's really, their bosses are our national governments.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason we get, you know, access, they listen to us is because, well, they know that their credit unions back in the United States are complaining to the U.S. government. And so it filters through. And actually, the chairman or the secretary general of the Basel Committee,
mm-hmm.
William Cohen, is an American. He's really great, actually.
Oh,
he's
cool.
The one kind of leading, you know, this revisions, reductions in risk,
mm-hmm.
Reductions in reg burden, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, it's very noticeable what's gone on. So now they're tightening on the big banks, but the little guys, well, we've got some opportunities here. So
and that means growth, right?
Right, exactly.
Right, cool.
Well, that's what's holding back. I mean, there was a presentation yesterday by the CEO of a relatively large a mutual bank, but it's basically a credit union. It's a member-owned institution,
mm-hmm.
Just like credit unions. In fact, it used to be called a credit union, and now they're calling it banks, but it's not like in the U.S. where that's demutualization.
Mm-hmm.
He said that basically in their traditional business of, like, you know, savings, loans, payments, things like that, their ROA is 43 basis points. So they've been going into other types of things to get a bigger return,
mm-hmm.
but it's just the regulations are a big part of it, and they get the full Basel III. I mean, even the U.S. risk-based capital reg is, like, not the full thing, where in Australia they're just like, well, it's one size fits all, unless you're really big, in which case you get to design your own size.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh, Michael, what a tangled web we weave.
I know.
But this is, again, kind of overall, it sounds like it's great news for credit
unions. It is,
it's a good deal.
You know, the pendulum swings both ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, you
mm-hmm.
know, when there's another financial crisis,
and it'll go back the other way.
Well, you know, they're always fighting the last war. It'll be whatever the next crisis is,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be something they didn't anticipate,
mm-hmm.
or otherwise it wouldn't happen. I mean, that was kind of the thing with mortgages. Well, to be honest, I mean, I was working for CUNA when there was the run-up to that, and the credit unions were not doing the, like, dodgy lending.
Exactly.
But, you know, we'd listen to the radio, and it'd be like, well, 1% mortgage is a reality. And I'd be like, that's not a reality, maybe for, like, a year. And then it's like, this is on sports radio? Like, what's going on here, you know? You meet people, and they'd be like, oh, I can take nothing and turn it into a loan. And we're like, well, where are you selling that?
Yeah,
I hope it's
exactly.
not credit unions. Mm-hmm. And those, but, you know, the Basel II standard said, oh, well, all mortgages are the same. So while the mortgages credit unions make, mm-hmm. now there's a less of a capital requirement than before by mm-hmm. at least about 17%, if mm-hmm. not like 40% less. If you're making like full, you know, 100% loan-to-value type mortgages, then you got to hold more capital, and that's the right way to do it.
Yep.
And if you can go up above that, I mean, but if it's you've got private mortgage insurance on the amount above 80% from like a AAA rated mm-hmm. insurance company,
mm-hmm.
it actually lowers the capital compared to Basel II anyway.
Hmm.
So the way credit unions do it, you know, it's good. It's that's what they want to encourage. Mm-hmm. They want everybody to be more like credit unions,
right,
essentially
right.
what it comes down to.
We're setting the template.
Yeah, well, we're the ones who did the best. And it's because, you know, the cooperative structure doesn't make you want to go do the cliff diving to
exactly.
get some crazy bonus or to bump your stock price so you can cash mm-hmm. out and go retire.
That's
and,
the benefits of being that kind of a conservative group that we are. So
right.
Very
well,
cool.
And then it's all about serving the members when you get down
of
to
course,
it rather than trying to make maximizing profits off of
exactly,
it.
Exactly. And when you help out the member, I mean, that improves the economy as well, because when you're helping
well,
people
exactly.
out, I mean,
yeah,
that,
yeah.
one thing complements the other.
Well, exactly.
You know? It's not
well,
a selfish type thing.
You know, CUNA's done some economic analysis in the U.S. Basically, if I remember right, it's that basically on interest rates would be 1 or 2 percentage points higher from banks if credit unions didn't exist in the United States. So even if you're not a credit union member, mm-hmm. you're benefiting just because credit unions are there offering
mm-hmm.
a better deal.
Mm-hmm.
So and it's like that pretty much everywhere.
Thank you. Can we say?
Yeah.
Well, cool, Michael. Thank you so much for hanging out with us for a few minutes.
Anytime.
The education is always appreciated, so I appreciate that as well.
It's great talking to you.
Well done, sir.